The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the ShopTapes.com studios.
It's good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us on the program. Pedro Gomez, ESPN Baseball Insider. I was full on into the baseball game last night, Game 5 of the World Series. The Rams-Seahawks game was another Monday Night Football disaster, just awful football last night. Somehow I did find my way over there towards the end, but man, I don't know if it's just an oversaturation of football. I watched the Thursday night game. Friday night, I'm at high school. Saturday, I'm all over college. Sunday, I'm all around the NFL. And I get to Monday, and it's just the games have been brutal. Just brutal. Like, what am I doing sitting here for another 3 hours watching this slop? The baseball, on the other hand, now that was terrific stuff last night. Pedro Gomez in about 15 minutes. Herb Sendek's going to join us today, ASU head basketball coach. They get started coming up this next week. Over on sports360az.com, a couple of terrific pieces on University of Arizona and Sean Miller getting underway. On Dan Marley at Grand Canyon University, and we'll get it all put together with a bow in state with Herb Sendek. We did NAU a couple of weeks ago, too, so and we're all over with the season's changing. It's a terrific time of year, of course. You have the NFL in full swing. You have the baseball playoffs. The Suns get started tomorrow night. And we have a unnamed general manager admitting that he's going to be tanking games this season. I can only hope that it's Ryan McDonough and the Suns, that they're smart enough. Tonight, Andrew Wiggins, who's been on the cover of Sports Illustrated, who's estimated to be the next big thing, makes his college debut tonight. A year from now, if the Suns play their cards right, Andrew Wiggins will be making his debut for the Phoenix Suns. We can only hope. So there's that going on as well. Eric Sorensen has our Facebook question of the day. First of all, were you on the baseball or the football last night?
A little bit of both, but I wrapped up the baseball game and was able to catch most of the fourth quarter in what was a surprisingly entertaining Monday night game.
You call that entertaining?
Yeah, there was drama. Who would have thought last night
you'd have
last-second drama between the Rams and the Seahawks?
Okay, the very final play.
With Kellen Clemens playing quarterback?
Did you see Golden Tate act like a complete fool?
Of course I did.
Anybody who thinks that that stuff's funny or that that stuff's cool, that's what's wrong with... There's a lot of things that are right about sports. That is what is wrong with sports. There was nothing cool or nothing funny about waving bye-bye to a defensive back, and you almost didn't make it into the end zone, you fool.
And you're Golden Tate. Like, if Megatron did that, no one would like it, but it'd be like... First of all, Megatron would never do that, but I'm just saying.
Could you imagine Larry Fitzgerald doing that?
And Dez Bryant's upper echelon, top of the league receiver.
He's a knucklehead.
Golden Tate's just a guy.
Yeah, Dez Bryant was a knucklehead this weekend.
Of course.
Could you imagine Fitz waving bye-bye to somebody?
Never.
I mean, when you're watching this stuff.
Or a running back. It's always a wide receiver, Brad. Always.
Well, it's the diva position. That's the way it is. Here's our Facebook question of the day from Eric.
Today's Facebook question of the day is, the Cards are 4-4 at the midway point of the season, as you know. They are entering the bye. Mm-hmm. So we ask you to play teacher. Grade the following areas. Offense, defense, special teams, coaching.
Offense gets a C. Defense gets a B+. Special teams get a C-. Although Jay Feely's been pretty good and Zasadil's punted well, they just had breakdowns. Haven't seen a big punt return yet out of Patrick Peterson. It's been a couple of years since that's happened. Coaching, I'd give them a C+, maybe a B- to be at 4-4.
I'd go offense, C-, defense, A-.
A-.
Yeah. Defense, A-.
What happened against Seattle? I mean, come on.
One out of eight games.
What happened against Detroit?
The Cardinals' defense kept Calvin them in more games than the offense.
What did Calvin Johnson do when Detroit played here?
What does Calvin Johnson do, though?
Well, were they able to shut him down?
What did Vernon Davis do? I'm going to give it a B.
What about New Orleans? What about New Orleans when they played New Orleans?
Yeah, that's a good point.
I mean, come on. You're going to give them an A?
I'm grading on a curve.
Yeah. I wish you were my teacher when I was back in the day. I love this curve.
And coaching, let's go B.
Just a B.
Yeah.
Well,
they're 4-4.
Yeah, I know. They were 4-4 a year ago, and they weren't
good.
Yeah,
but they start off 4-0.
That's right. They never pulled out. Head over to facebook.com/sports360az, like our page, and share your input. Great Donna Kerr, huh? That's facebook.com/sports360az. Let's get you caught up on some of the things on my mind in the world of sports, and it's brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top. In the White Mountains, I always call them beautiful. I'm understating it. It's gorgeous up there this time of year. Who wouldn't want to be there and going after the biggest, baddest brown fishing tournament that's going on right now? Details at Honda.com. The Honda Resort and Casino, great food, great fun, great entertainment. Head on up, day, morning, noon, night. Pull down the slots, have some fun, great winnings, great food. Stay there as well. Get away from it all at the Honda Resort and Casino. So last night here in Arizona, in particular in the Phoenix market, the World Series ratings were higher than the Monday night football game between Seattle and St. Louis. Nationally, the World Series game approached an 11. They've been about a 9. For those of you in the numbers game, what does this all mean? Those numbers aren't very good nationally in the grand scheme of things, but they continue to get better. As this series has progressed, there have been more people that have been intrigued by it. It's not just the beards of Boston or goofy stuff that's happened. Obviously, the way that games have ended in games 3 and 4 raised the awareness. Last night, I was there very early on in the game. I didn't just jump on in the middle of it. In the first inning, when Mike Matheny decided it was okay to pitch to David Ortiz, I was screaming, "No! Are you kidding me? All David Ortiz has done is killed you." And he killed them again. There have been players that have come out of the woodwork in this series. That's the beauty of baseball. David Ross was one of those last night. A guy with very little publicity, if any publicity, gets his chance to make his mark for Boston.
Set by Wainwright. And the pitch. Ross swings and lines one down the left field line. It's a fair ball. Hitting on the track. Rolling into the corner. Bogart scores and a fan touches it.
And the Red Sox would go on to the victory in that game by a score of 3-1. It would be a very good night for John Lester on the mound. John Farrell was very pleased with his team. Mike Matheny on the other side. Now they've got to go to Boston and win 2 games in order to keep the series going. I know the Cardinal fans are saying, "Hey, look, Boston just won 2 in St. Louis. We can win 2 back on the East Coast." There's a big story developing even as we're speaking in the NFL. The Seattle Seahawks are trying to acquire Jared Allen. Today is the NFL trade deadline, and within the Cardinals division, you look at where Seattle is right now and the push being made with the deadline coming up tonight, that Seattle trying to get the Minnesota Vikings Jared Allen. If Seattle were able to do that. Wow. On the other side of the coin, in watching last night's game, Seattle's tackles are not good. If the Cardinals were to play Seattle, and I understand it's up there and we know what happened last season, the way the Cardinals' defense has been getting better and better and better, if Jared Allen goes to Seattle, what does that do to the Cardinals' locker room? Does it send a message that, man, I wish? It's kind of like the trade deadline in baseball. You get that player that ownership is so committed to going out and winning that they're willing to do anything. We're willing to mortgage our future. They had a terrific graphic in last night's game. Terrific graphic that showed how Russell Wilson is getting next to no money because he's a draft pick. And because of that, Seattle is able to go out and work the salary cap to bring in players and not eat up all their cap space. Eventually, that window will close. Eventually, guys like Richard Sherman will get huge, huge extensions, and they'll have to break it up. Marshawn Lynch won't be able to be around. But if you're in a spot where you want to send a message to the rest of the NFC, because if we're talking just power ratings, Seattle to me is still number 2. Denver's number 1 in my power ratings. Denver's number 1. There's nobody close to Denver. And I don't think Denver's defense is all that great. What we saw last night out of Seattle with Kellen Clements out there, the Seahawks should have just destroyed him, and they really didn't. He was able to keep some plays alive and keep his team in the game. I didn't think much of the Seahawks' game plan last night. But there was the big play to Golden Tate that turned the game around last night.
Wilson on the fake. Throwing downfield for Golden Tate. Great in the air. It's Tate. Took it from Jenkins. Taunting on his way to the end zone. Flag is down as he scores the touchdown.
Yeah, and so it comes down to the final play of the game for St. Louis last night after a terrific World Series and not so great NFL game.
Empty backfield. Clemens pressured. Puts it up. Not even close. Incomplete. Ball game over. And the Seahawks survive.
So they go on to the victory, and that's what happens when you're a good team. You're going to have letdown weeks. While the Cardinals, I think, are in the race for a postseason spot at 4-4, some of you would say it's a mirage. I would say to you, no, they've been able to navigate through some teams that you didn't think at the start of the season they'd be able to get past. They're off this week. The bye comes at a perfect time. Next up, they have Houston. The Texans aren't any good at all. They don't know what they're going to do at quarterback. Case Keenum is going to start this weekend. Matt Schaub is back, but they're not putting him in the lineup. It looks like Matt Schaub, it's a divorce. It's waiting to happen there. On the college front, ASU is an 11.5 point favorite at Washington State. That's a lot of points. 11.5 for Thursday night's Halloween night game. The U of A is a 16-point favorite over Cal. When's the last time U of A was favored by that many points? But here's the one that really caught my eye on the college front. Florida State plays Miami this week. Two teams that are ranked in the top 10. And the wise guys in Vegas have Florida State as a 21.5 point favorite. Three touchdown favorite? Top 10 teams? I thought that was a misprint at first. That's a lot of points for two teams that are in this battle. But again, Jameis Winston to me is in the discussion now, if not the leader for the Heisman Trophy.
Somebody must know something.
Well,
as the old saying goes.
The wise guys know something. We're going to get over to the Sun season, which opens tomorrow night. And the subject of tanking, because it has come out today that an unnamed general manager in the NBA telling ESPN the magazine that he is admitting he's worked with the owner to tank this season. To me, it's very obvious that it's Ryan McDonough and Robert Sarver. The simple standpoint of Ryan McDonough able to convince Robert Sarver to do anything is stunning to me. On the other side, back to the World Series, ESPN baseball insider, analyst, and Valley resident Pedro Gomez joins us for our weekly segment. We'll get in a little bit of Diamondbacks as well, but World Series Game 6 talk is next.
Time to talk Arizona Diamondbacks and Major League Baseball with ESPN insider Pedro Gomez. Here's Brad Sesman.
Pedro Gomez joins us every week. Game 6 of the World Series tomorrow night in Boston. Your vote of the MVP of the World Series today would be...
Boy, it'd be hard to go against David Ortiz, and he probably would get it, although...
John Lester
has made an incredible case, and you know he's only out there twice, and look what he's done both times. I would say that Poppy probably gets it, but Lester should be. And you know what? There is precedent. Let's not forget the 1990 World Series, where Billy Hatcher hit 1,000 basically, but they gave the MVP award to Jose Rijo for his two starts. So it's not unprecedented to think that Lester could get it.
Who's the better team so far? Forget about what it says, 3-2 Red Sox. In your mind, who's the better team? Because we've had two games that have ended in such bizarre fashion.
You think? I mean, on paper, I still think I would take the Cardinals. And this is the beauty of sports. We don't play the game on paper or in computers or computer games or anything like that. You actually have to physically go out and play. And Boston has played better. And Boston is doing more with, I think, less. But they deserve to be up 3-2.
You know, when I was watching the obstruction call the other night, me being a fool like I can be, I'm on Twitter, and as soon as the play happens, before I even see a replay, I'm like, bad call, can't believe it.
Oh, I was saying the opposite.
Well, that's why you're the insider and I'm just some dope behind a microphone. So then I see the replay, and it was, okay, I was wrong. That's the way it goes. What I what I saw in the replay when they showed Pedroia, and this speaks to his baseball IQ to me, Pedro.
He knew immediately.
He came running in, and he was angry. And then when they said obstruction, you could just see him say, oh, and then he just ran off the field.
Yeah. So, and he is the equivalent of a gym rat in basketball, somebody who grew up with the game. And somebody who just lives, breathes, and dies the game. That is all Dustin Pedroia is a baseball player. He's a very good guy. I like Dustin a lot. He is a baseball player, though. And he knew, and you're right, he ran off the field, and I thought that was very revealing. Mm-hmm. And it spoke to, you're right, the acumen that he has in the game. And the fact that he knew there's no arguing this one. We're screwed. Yeah, we're going to get the loss, and that's all there is to it.
Because he made such a terrific play to get the ball to the plate. And so in the heat of battle, you would envision you just lost the game after that great play. But it said a lot to me about him. He's a future manager, right, when it's all done?
If he wants to be,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
And I would guess he will want to be. This is his life. His life is baseball, so it's not going to change. A great story I heard about him, this was probably about a year ago. He's in the Boston dugout, and they're about to play the Yankees, but it's about an hour, hour and a half before game time. And he's with his son, and his son is about 6 months old at the time, maybe 4 months old. I mean, a very young, young baby. And with nobody that could really hear him, one person did hear him, but it wasn't meant to be heard. He's about to walk into the clubhouse, down the steps and up the ramp to the Red Sox clubhouse, and he basically just whispered into his baby's ear, let's go kick some Yankees ass today. it was such, and then it was so revealing in terms of who he is.
That's great.
He's telling this to a four-month-old.
Right.
But that's the only thing that was on his mind at that point.
Who do you think the Yankees are rooting for here?
I would probably guess the Red Sox, and I say that because of the familiarity they have with them.
Sure, sure.
Because of the professional respect that they have for the Red Sox. They know how the Red Sox were able to turn their franchise around in 1 year. I mean, this is a team that lost 93 games a year ago, and this year they win 96, and they're now one win away from winning the World Series. So I would think that professionally, they are probably rooting for the Red Sox.
ESPN baseball analyst Pedro Gomez with us for a couple of minutes. I want to go back on something you and I talked about last week, and that's David Ortiz and his Hall of Fame credentials. You, because of the PEDs with Ortiz, have said last week you're not going to vote for him.
And it hurts me in the sense that I really like David Ortiz. I respect him. But it's just, it's a decision that I've come to with myself on when it comes to this topic.
Okay, and so when he goes out and if he's named the MVP,
uh-huh.
does it, and you're more than welcome to change your mind.
Well, I do have years to do that.
You have years to do that, but you have years to do that, and as he continues to build on his body of work post that, if indeed there is a post that, because I'm always skeptical, I'm always thinking that chemists are ahead of all the testers and all that, but doesn't it put a little bit in the back of your mind, Pedro, of, maybe I should rethink this stance, or not? Are you that dug in?
At least, it allows you to bring it up.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. And sure. And, the beauty is that you have 5 years after they played their last game before they appear on a ballot. So there is definitely time to consider circumstances, to consider whatever it may be. So, right now, as I sit here today, I would say no. But who knows? Who knows?
Yeah. On the Diamondbacks front, so the Gold Glove Awards are going to be handed out tonight on your network.
Yes.
And is it three Diamondbacks? Is it Goldschmidt, Parr, and Corbin? Is it two Diamondbacks that get it? What do you think?
I think Parr has got a very good chance, which would mean that the last two seasons that he's been an everyday outfielder, he will have won. Because remember, he won one 3 years ago, or two years ago, and then they decided to go out and sign Jason Kubel, and Parra became, a fourth outfielder, but he certainly has proven this past season that he is worthy of being an everyday player, and it's surprising that he wasn't. that they decided to go after Kubel. And I understood it. They were going after a bat. They wanted the power in the middle of the lineup, and that's why they went after Kubel. But, you know, Goldschmidt's got a chance. It's I think the finalists are Adrian Gonzalez. Is it Rizzo and him?
I believe so.
I think so. So I would say he's got a chance. And if he doesn't win it this year, for whatever reason, I think that he's got a few of them in his future. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
What do the Diamondbacks have to do? Because, you know, Gibby for now is staying here. I still think that if Detroit really wanted to make a run at him, that he should consider. Because there's, you and I have talked about this over and over and over. He's on the hot seat. But what do the Diamondbacks have to do in this offseason to become a player in the National League? I mean, how big of moves do they have to make because they're so far back? And if Gibby's sitting there in his tree stand in Michigan thinking, I'm coming back to Arizona, and for what? They've got to do something pretty dramatic, wouldn't you agree, to put themselves in this race?
I would think that they'd probably have to add a big bat in the middle of the lineup. And it's ironic that we're talking about that because, you know, Justin Upton was here. But he wasn't going to work out here for whatever reason.
Sure.
But that is the kind of bat that they're probably going to look into getting this offseason. And which direction they go in will be interesting to see. But it's after watching the season unfold that they're just not on the same level as other clubs. And they need to do something if they're going to try to make a push next year. And it's not like there's some super clubs in the National League that can't be overtaken.
Right.
Yeah, the Dodgers had a great season, but for them to repeat what they did is not going to be easy. So the Dodgers can be beaten, but the way that the Diamondbacks are currently built, it's probably going to be difficult for them.
Yeah, I really believe that, in fairness to Gibby, it's got to be a couple of moves by Kevin Towers to send a message that we're trying to help you out rather than we're going to just throw you out there with the same group of guys and we think we can compete. Because I've heard that line before, well, we think our group is good enough to compete. Well, I would disagree with you on that. And there comes a point where you have all these kids down in the farm system. Do something with these kids, not just Trevor Bauer for D.D. Gregorius. You know, you've got to do something significant. Because I agree with you. There's nobody in the middle of that lineup that's going to put the fear of God in opposing pitchers.
No, I mean, Goldschmidt, yes. But anybody else, no. And, you know, you can pitch around Goldschmidt.
That's my point.
You can absolutely pitch around him and not have to really give him much to hit. So they need something to back him up. I mean, you see it in Detroit, even though Fielder had a horrible postseason, but having Cabrera and Fielder. And the Angels tried it. It didn't work successfully this year, but that was their thought process in having Hamilton and Pujols. It's hard to do it with just one because teams can pitch around you. And you look at the Giants, even though Sandoval and Posey are there, it's neither one is known as a huge bopper. And the Giants certainly suffered. I mean, they could probably use a bat in the middle of their lineup.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to do it with just one. And that's, I think, probably going to be something the Diamondbacks are looking at. I think also in terms of helping Gibby, you know, I heard an interesting name for pitching coach the other day that could become a reality, and that's Dave Duncan.
Wow.
And that would be a huge, huge move. Even though Duncan doesn't throw a pitch, we know his body of work over the course of nearly 30 years as a big league pitching coach, probably or arguably the best during that time period. His staffs were always known for very low ERAs, being aggressive, pitching inside, all those things that Kevin Towers talked about wanting his team to be. Dave Duncan right now is, you know, living in Tucson. He had a tragic incident. His wife passed away from cancer, but certainly that is that would be a huge coup if the Diamondbacks could get him.
And why would he come here? I mean, he could pick his job anywhere.
Lives in Arizona.
Yeah.
That could definitely be a plus. He doesn't really have a relationship with Gibby that I know of, but I would think that, you know, being close to home would probably be a big plus.
Yeah, because this pitching staff, in particular the bullpen, is going to go through some upheaval. I can't see Putz coming back here next season.
It's going to be difficult.
I can't see that one.
It's going to be difficult.
And then you have the Daniel Hudson injury. Is he going to come back?
He's
a mid-season guy.
I don't even know if they're counting on him.
Yeah.
I think anything they get from him would be a bonus.
Yeah.
But he is their the closest thing they have to an ace.
Let you go off that. Appreciate your time all season long. We'll be in touch in the offseason, Pedro. Thanks.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
It's Pedro Gomez, ESPN baseball analyst, Valley resident. Appreciate his time for a couple of minutes. Dave Duncan. There's a name. Tanking games. Oh, this is going to be fun. So on the other side, an unnamed general manager telling ESPN the magazine that he has convinced his owner to tank games, to just not go for it this year. This is something I've been ranting about for 3 years. I have to believe it's right here in our own city. I have to believe as the NBA season opens tonight. Well, I'll lay this all out on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmann. The NBA season starts tonight. The Phoenix Suns open up tomorrow night against Portland. They're not going to be any good this year. Brad Sussmann with you. In fact, over on sports360az.com, I laid out a pretty compelling argument. I do believe in that. Will the owner and the president, will Robert Sarver and Lon Babbie of the Suns stay out of the way? Please just go disappear and let general manager Ryan McDonough do his thing and let Jeff Hornacek do his thing. Are they going to be patient over the next 3 years? The Suns are going to be lucky to win 20 games this year. They're going to be really bad, and there's going to be a ton of empty seats, and the television ratings are going to be awful. And eventually, will the owner panic, come down from his tower and do things that are just flat out stupid? Go make moves, and I don't want to hear all this nonsense about blaming the previous guy that was in the general manager's chair. You were the guys that hired him. You were the guys that said, hey, Lance Blanks is a really smart move, and you're the guys that signed off on every last bit of these moves, and you're still here. That's the scary part. You're the ones that said, hey, Kendall Marshall, Michael Beasley, Wesley Johnson, and you guys keep talking about, well, we've turned the page, we've learned our lesson, we've been humbled and all that stuff. I don't want to hear from either one of them. There's no reason to hear from either one of them. There just isn't. And the further away they are from this, the better the organization is going to be. The only thing I want to see Robert Sarver at is charity events, waving, signing a check. Don't need to see him sitting at the arena. Go to San Diego, stay in Del Mar, fly in occasionally, do business, move on. Lon Babbie, don't want to hear him on the radio, don't want to see him on television. There's no reason. There's only two people that should be making any decisions with this organization when it comes to basketball, and that's Ryan McDonough and Jeff Hornacek. And they've done some very good things so far, but the nonsense of, well, it was just this one guy's fault. Well, you're the ones that hired him, so please disappear. And I'm actually looking forward to the NBA. Tonight, there's two games, the Bulls and the Heat. I think the Bulls can beat the Heat this year. I do. I'm a big fan of Derrick Rose. I wasn't a fan of how last year went down. I thought he had his inner circle. We had Charles Barkley on the show many times talking about that disappointment. The brother and all that nonsense. Go out and play. Can Noah stay healthy? Do they have enough depth in Chicago? I will watch the Bulls and Heat tonight. And I'll probably watch some of the Lakers against the Clippers tonight. The Lakers aren't going to be any good, and all these bandwagon Laker fans are going to be all up in arms about how bad their team is and how it's Mike D'Antoni's fault. You've had a run. If I'm sitting in that position of whether to re-sign Kobe Bryant or not when he's not at 100% and to tie more money up just because I'm afraid to let him go, it's kind of like the Larry Fitzgerald thing. Sometimes guys have to go. Sometimes you have to turn the page. And sometimes you have to tank. And that brings me to this story with the Suns. Because I have to believe the Suns are the team that's in this story. The Suns meet Portland tomorrow night. In ESPN, the magazine, there is a piece that has come out, and a general manager in the NBA didn't deny that he is working with his owner to tank this season. You need superstars to compete in this league, and the playing field for those guys is tilted toward a few big market teams. They are demanding trades and getting together and deciding where they want to go in free agency. It's tough for us to compete with that, this GM said. So a high lottery pick is all we have. I agree with that. Look what happened down in Miami. LeBron James, Chris Bosh, Dwayne Wade. How do you pull it off? This unnamed general manager talking with ESPN, the magazine. First, you talk it over with ownership. Hey, Robert, it's Ryan. Let's go have lunch. Can I get you guys something to drink? Yes, I'll take an Arnold Palmer. Robert, we have no shot this year. Let's tank for Andrew Wiggins. First, you talk it over with ownership. So Ryan McDonough's sitting there, got his Arnold Palmer, and he's just laid it out. We need to stink and stink bad this year. Continuing to quote here, I analyzed the team and told them what I wanted to do, the guys I wanted to get rid of, and the guys with future value whom we wanted to keep. We obviously traded away some of our veteran guys who gave us a better chance of winning right now for future draft picks and young players. That sounds very familiar to what's been going on here in Phoenix. The owner didn't want to tread water any more than I did. They'd rather go down to the bottom with the hope of coming up. So they signed off on it. It wasn't a fight at all. In a different season, it might not make sense, but this draft certainly makes it more appealing. That's Andrew Wiggins. You're going to hear Andrew Wiggins a ton. Continuing to coach this unnamed GM. Our coach understands that too. It's no secret what we're trying to do. And you can't lie to him anyway, or you'll lose all trust. We never really had to tell him because the handwriting is on the wall. He knows exactly what's going on, and he's good with it. What's hard is keeping it from the players. If you took a poll in all 30 locker rooms, regardless of how the roster looks, I bet they'd all say they are a playoff team. That's good, because you want them to play with effort and lose organically. You never tell the players not to try to win a game, but it's obvious that you're putting out a team that's just not good enough to win. And this piece goes on. Now, first of all, I'm fine with all of this.
Yeah, and I've never looked forward to a losing season as much as I have this season. And I mean that in all seriousness,
absolutely.
Brad. Like last year, there was actually hope, like, man, maybe this team could be like a 7 seed. And then they got out there and it's just like, no. Number one, they're not good. Number two, it's a mismatched roster. This year, the Suns aren't going to be good, and I'm completely fine with it.
Any fan who buys season tickets to this season deserves a year of free season tickets because they're going to see so much bad basketball. They're going to see, but what they are going to see, I believe, because it's not a group of vets. It's not a group of old guys.
Exactly.
I'm fine with heirs of enthusiasm. Heirs of enthusiasm are a very good thing. Archie Goodwin is going to have heirs of enthusiasm. Alex Len is going to have heirs of enthusiasm. Eric Bledsoe is going to have heirs because he wants to get this gigantic contract. But none of those guys are even at their prime yet. And so when they go out and they play in a game and they're down 25-12 at the end of the first quarter, and that's going to be the way it is most nights, and then around January, end of January, they're going to start to maybe pull some of those games out. And they're going to get closer and closer.
But in the long run, playing these kids, having them get their teeth kicked in,
yes,
is going to be a benefit to not only them, but to the entire organization.
Remember, Kevin Durant started out 2-28 in Oklahoma City. This very well could be 2-28. The only team I look at that's worse than the Suns is Philadelphia. Emeka Okafor is not even going to be on the floor probably for them this season. So that
not
trade,
likely.
So that trade was just, let's get Gortat out of here. Again, going back to this story. We obviously traded away some of our veteran guys who gave us a better chance of winning right now for future draft picks and young players. I'd say that pretty much speaks to what's going on here. I'd say the Luis Scola trade speaks pretty much to what's going on here.
There's been a theme too with the trades. I mean, you look at what they've given up and what they've gotten back in return, and it's not any surprise what they're trying to do.
When Goran Dragic is traded, not if he's traded, when Goran Dragic is traded, it's going to be another veteran guy that's sent away.
See, that's the one name, Brad, that I heard they're actually not going to trade.
See,
I heard some people inside the organization say, tap the brakes on that one.
I would say that would be a mistake.
I would, too.
I'm not the biggest... I've always said Goran Dragic is a very good sixth man. Have Goran Dragic come off the bench for me, I'm fine. Have Goran Dragic start, he's not even a top 10 point guard in the NBA. There's 10 other point guards I'd want in front of him. I can't see Goran Dragic matching up with Chris Paul one-on-one. Not going to work. Could I see Eric Bledsoe doing that? Well, let's see how he recovers from his injury. But it's very interesting that there's this one GM that's not denying that he's talked about tanking, and I have to believe that it's right here in our own backyard. I have to believe that. Because Ryan McDonough is pretty shrewd from a media standpoint. He's tied in on a lot of media fronts. Ryan McDonough has received universal praise for all the moves he's made from basketball guys. And that's through the years probably of developing relationships, which he figured out from his dad, and knowing in his position with the Celtics as, hey, look at this guy, look at this guy, let me feed you something, let me feed you something, let me feed you something. Now he's the guy that's in control, and there's a lot of people there that are going to take care of him. That's fine.
And there's only a handful of GMs that it could be when you think about it. Small collection.
Philadelphia.
I mean, there are, like you said, Philadelphia and the Suns are
Utah.
Kind of in their a class by themselves.
Right. And Andrew Wiggins makes his debut tonight. I'm thinking that we need to do an Andrew Wiggins daily update on this show over the next 9 months. Because the next significant day for the Suns is not the games that they're going to play, not tomorrow night, not when they play. When they play Philadelphia, I don't have the schedule in front of me. When they play Philadelphia, who is going to try harder to tank in that game? That'll be a very fun game to watch. We have the flu. We have MRSA in the locker room. We had a Scottsdale night.
Home teams have Scottsdale nights too?
Sure. That game will be a 65-64, one of the more forgettable games in the history of the NBA. Because head-to-head tiebreakers and all that stuff. Ping pong ball. All those things. I'm good with all this. Andrew Wiggins tonight against Pittsburgh State, a Division II team. Most of you don't care. If you are a Suns fan, you should. Every game that he plays, you need to watch because he's the guy that everybody's trying to angle for. There's a couple of others. Gordon down in Tucson. Yeah, I get it. So on the other side, we've done a lot of college basketball. Jared Cohen actually has been with Sean Miller. He's been with Herb Sendek. He's been with Jack Murphy up at NAU. He's been with Dan Marley over at GCU. And he's put everything together on them, so we're going to have him come in next. Brad Sussmath with you, sports360az.com. On Twitter on a busy Tuesday, Jared Allen, the 49ers are out. But the Seattle Seahawks looking at Jared Allen. Do they have enough cap space? Could Jared Allen come into the NFC West? And what do the Cardinals do about this? They're not moving Larry Fitzgerald today. All this stuff about, oh, Fitz is going to stay here because the general manager said so. There's this one word that the GM kept using. We hope. 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 Yeah, I hope I make it home without getting run over by a bus. We hope. All right? We're going to talk some college basketball on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmath. You know, with everything going on, the Coyotes are in action tonight. Brad Sussmath with you, sports360az.com. Check it out. White Mountain Radio, always going to be on White Mountain Radio. This segment of the show, the Brad Sussmath Show, brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Next week, Eric Sorensen is going to Salt Lake City to cover Arizona State football at Utah against the Utes. He's going to be there, courtesy of Santan Ford. General Manager Tim Hovick told me a couple of years ago when I had this vision of starting sports360az.com of, so you think that ASU doesn't get enough coverage, enough attention? I said, well, actually, college sports in general don't get enough attention. It's like, really? And I said, yeah, college basketball doesn't get enough attention. We went with the U of A last year. Jared went with the U of A up to Salt Lake City. Eric and I were out in Los Angeles with them. We were over in Las Vegas with them at the Pac-12 tournament. So whether it's football or basketball, Santan Ford, where it is all about you, this is a guy that's really into the Valley and the Arizona sports scene. It means that's the place you should go to buy your vehicle, buy that next car, buy that next truck, whether it's the hybrid Fusion like I drive or it could be the F-150. We're coming up to the holiday season. Are you in full confidence of what it is that you're driving? Stop on in, Santan Ford. Santan Ford, it is all about you. Here is Shane Doan on tonight. They take on the LA Kings. These two teams are tied for fourth place this game in Glendale tonight.
We know we got a good team. We know we're a good team. We know that we can win games, and once you start winning games, you got to continue to play the exact same way, and you can't try to think you're a little bit better than you are. And the system that we play is, it works when we do it. When we try to get outside of it, then we can look pretty bad.
I like that. Very straightforward. we can look pretty bad. And they have at times. Tonight, Coyotes, Kings. On the other side, earlier today, Herb Sendek, head basketball coach at Arizona State. They start this coming week. Last night, and Herb met this morning with Arizona media. Last night, U of A had their first exhibition game down in Tucson. Grand Canyon University with Dan Marley opens up that era this coming Friday, and NAU is getting ready to go as well. Jared Cohen with Sports 360 AZ is with us because he has talked to all four coaches. Jared is also going to be a rock star this coming Monday. He and his family are on Family Feud. They taped this back in, was it July?
It was July. Beginning of July.
And you can't tell how you did, but they are having a viewing party. If any of you want to come to Jared's house or his parents' house for the viewing party, you're not invited.
No.
But you can watch Jared this Monday night on AZTV, I think is where Family Feud airs.
Yep. Channel, what is it, in the Valley? That's channel 13? 13.
Yeah. Family Feud, are you the first family that's introduced? You can't tell.
You're both introduced at the same time. It's like they jump right into the show.
Yeah, but I mean, did you hug and kiss early with?
Yeah, that's something you have to figure out.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm just wanting to know.
I have a good spot behind the podium.
If you said said anything that revealed how you did, you'd get sued, right? They'd pull your episode.
They might be done. They might. They could be listening to us right now, waiting for me to crack.
All right. But that's seriously, he's on Family Feud.
And it's a lot of fun. There's some funny things that happen.
Yes. Your wife was pregnant at the time with your second?
She was. She was. Yeah. Very early on.
So she gets sick. No, I'm just kidding. all right. So all seriousness, is college basketball in the state? You've visited with all four coaches, seen all four programs. Is college basketball in the state? It starts this week. Is it going to be worth it this year?
100%, yes. And for those that like to pay attention to college basketball, once March comes around, you're going to miss out on so much because both the Pac-12 teams, U of A and ASU in the state, are going to be very good. Everyone knows Arizona is going to be very good, but ASU is going to be very good as well. This might be as talented of a team that they've had in a while, and a lot of that has to do with Jimmy Heath being back.
How many first-round picks are in Arizona this year?
Wow. I mean, you look at U of A's roster, and they could have three on their roster. Jahi Carson is a first-round pick. Jordan Baczynski, depending on how he plays this year, could be a draft pick, maybe first-round pick. And then not sure about NAU or GCU, but you're looking at four or five right there, and that's just me going off the top of my head.
And that doesn't happen very often in our state. All right, what has to go right for U of A this year for them to be a – because they're a title-contending team.
Yeah, they need to be able to shoot the ball well. They don't have that one prolific outside shooter like a Salim Stoudemire or something like that. They don't have that guy. They're going to have to rely on a lot of guys.
Miles Simon, guys that
consistently can shoot from the outside. Nick Johnson can shoot. Gabe York, he's a sophomore. They're going to need him to step up and shoot. But they don't have a lot of guys that can, night in and night out, step up and knock down an outside shot. And they struggled against zone defenses last year. So if teams throw zones at them, they're going to have to be able to take a step back and shoot. And that might be a problem for them. And if they can shoot, I don't see a lot of teams stopping them.
Sports 360 AZ's Jaron Cohen. He has been with all four coaches here in the last week and a half, putting together his pieces on what's going to happen in college basketball, the season getting started this week. Jahi Carson, is there any question over at ASU about his durability?
No, I don't think so. He worked really hard over the summer. That's probably the only thing that you would question because he never really took any time off. His time off was the first 2 weeks of them getting back to practices here in the fall because he was nursing some shin splints and an ankle problem or whatnot. That was really the only time off he's had. He participated in camps and whatnot. But I think now that he's healthy and took a little bit of time off to get recharged, I think he's going to be fine. The guy's a warrior. Even if he is banged up, you know he's going to come out and play. And he's going to be one of the most prolific players in the conference this
year. What does Dan Marley have to work with at GCU?
Dan Marley has a lot to work with. I mean, they're going into their first year in Division One, which can be a huge step for a team that doesn't have a lot of experience. But they have guys that have transferred in that have Division One experience. They have two graduate transfers spending their final year of eligibility at GCU. One of them is Demetrius Walker, who we all know pretty well from his time at St. Mary's. He was also at ASU. And they have another guy to keep an eye on named Jeremy Adams. He was at Colorado for a majority of his career. He has a concussion right now, so he's sidelined, but he's another graduate transfer that's going to be playing that has Division I experience to go along with the guys that they already have on this roster. It might be a tough season for them, but they do have guys that have played at this level, and if they can provide leadership, who knows what this team can do once the WAC play starts.
It's really interesting having Dan Marley as a coach. I think the buzz around that program is going to continue to build.
And he's serious. You go into that practice,
oh, sure.
And I was at one practice, and he was getting on him. And he said, what did you guys win last year? What, 23 games? It doesn't mean anything because it's a whole new level. It's a whole new game. And he's pretty straightforward, and he makes them run. The one thing that has been consistent across the board when I've gone to their practices from talking to players and Marley is that they might not be the most talented, but they're going to be the hardest working team and best conditioned team in the conference.
Got about 45 seconds. Jack Murphy at NAU.
Going into year two, I think they did a great job last year kind of laying the foundation. What did they lose? Like 18 games in a row the year before, made it into the squeaked into the Big Sky tournament. Dwayne Russell, Peoria high school product, is going to be a big role player on this team at point guard. They're going to rely heavy on him.
You're not going to give me any categories for Monday night.
Any categories?
Yeah, I mean, what questions? Can you give me a hint as to what Jared and his family are going to be on Family Feud? This is a once in a lifetime. You're not going to give me anything. You had to sign it away. You couldn't tell me what survey said. What was one of the questions you were asked?
You know what? To be honest.
No. Don't say to be honest. That means you're not going to be honest.
I don't remember.
Get out of here. What are you talking about? You don't remember any of the questions.
I don't remember.
Eric, are you buying any of this? He's shoveling it in here.
He's got to, he signed that agreement that, he gave blood.
What are they going to take from you?
Isn't there an element of surprise that you want here?
No, I just want to know what was one of the questions you were asked.
You can hang out for another 5 days.
One of the questions was, survey says?
Okay, everybody's a comedian, okay? You're on open mic night at 10 o'clock. You're a nitwit. Get out of here. It's Jared Cohen. Thanks for coming by. Sports360AZ.com. There was a story that caught my eye this morning, and this is me being a beach kid from Southern California, and I still like to get out and surf. I'm not very good at it. I am a human longboard. I'm 6'8". So when I go back for the summers, I do go body surf quite a bit. I don't know, Eric, did you see the guy that caught the world's largest wave?
No, I didn't catch that.
Yesterday, Carlos Burley went big. And the pro surfer may go home with a world record. He rode a wave that was as high as 100 feet off the coast of Portugal yesterday at the 2014 Billabong Global Big Wave Awards. This is according to CBS.
100 feet?
If the feat is authenticated, and I don't know how you're going to authenticate it, he will have surpassed Garrett McNamara's record for biggest wave ever surfed by 22 feet.
I know how they do that, Brad. It's just like when someone hits a home run in baseball, yeah. They just have like a little thing that says how far the home run is hit. Same thing with a wave. They just kind of figure it out.
Everything was not smooth sailing when he did this. Before he broke the potential world record ride, he had to save another surfer's life. Guy was in the water when she hit a bump and broke her ankle. Hey, let's go out and go surfing today and break bones. What a great idea. I know there's going to be a 100-footer out there today. That sounds pretty cool. I want to be on top of a 100-foot wave. I've been on top of 7-foot waves as a body surfer, and when I get thrown and rolled and I'm eating sand, and there's more sand between my legs than I'd find at a Home Depot in the back sand parking lot, it's not fun. 100-foot wave. That's my choice.
The conversation probably went like this. Hey, sorry, I know you have a broken ankle, but we need to get out of here. There's a 100-foot wave coming.
I have to catch that wave. You're on your own. What I like is this guy who caught the 100-foot wave reported 100-foot wave. He described all of this to Stab magazine. Of course he did. What magazine are you with? I'm with Stab. Oh, that sounds great. What are we going to talk about? 100-foot waves breaking ankles. Stab magazine. I'm going to go get on a board and go try to find a 100-foot wave. How about you? Oh, I don't know. I might want to go to Chuck E. Cheese and just play games. Sports360AZ.com. Brad Susmat with you on Twitter at Brad Susmat. CESMAT. It is a great Tuesday.